Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Brian Brushwood.
Howdy, howdy.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, I'm here too.
So let's start off and talk about Justin has an ongoing project. We've publicly released the name.
No, I don't think so. I think I've said it.
Okay. What was the name again?
The name is Raise the Dead. It's an idea that I've had for a very long time. It's something that I've really wanted to do. It's a history podcast that will delve into the 1960 election with the specific focus on some of the lessons that I think history has kind of forgotten and how much they would have been helpful to be aware of in some of our modern political landscape, specifically the election of Donald Trump in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. So I've been writing it for way too long. I've been researching it for way too long. It was something that initially I really wanted to focus production-wise on bringing somebody in. And then at a certain point during my trip in Italy, I kind of just had the realization that I needed to just get it out. It just needs to be something that I need to know how to do. Even if I were to, you know, look at this as like an example of, oh, I want to keep doing this kind of content. I want to bring somebody in. I need to know exactly what I'm looking for, at least in educate. I need to learn how to speak the language going forward. So I recorded and edited the first episode of the series. It'll be 6 episodes total. Sent it to my friend Tamar, who's been working with me on the project and helping me edit the scripts. She gave me good notes. I then took another editing pass on it, and at that point it became ready enough for me to send it to people that not only do I, you know, tremendously respect, but also, you know, the thing whenever, you know, I'm sending stuff to Andrew or Brian, and I would suspect that you guys are probably the same way. It's hard often to get feedback from people that also create things from scratch. Because it needs to be a certain degree far along. There's two kinds of feedback. There's we're starting from scratch feedback, and then there's let me help you get it the 30% down the road feedback. And you know, for I think in general, it's usually better to be, it needs to read this is 70% down the road to people that know that, like, have that kind of mindset to get that kind of feedback. And so it was ready to go out. And so it went out, I think Thursday or Friday. And over the weekend, I got the feedback from both you guys.
How many folks, if you don't mind me asking, did you send it out to? Because that might be a good after things question is, like, how much feedback is too much feedback?
Yeah, well, I sent it to a bunch of people. I mean, basically, this was the, you know, I've been talking to you about this project for a while. So either I really, really want your opinion for very specific reasons, or it would just be weird because we're all friends if, like, you know, I was talking to you about, like, the feedback from Raise the Dead, and then Tom Merritt's like, oh, I didn't get it. And it's like, because I talked to Tom a lot about it. And not to say Tom is he has not yet to give me feedback, but I will very much treasure it.
One of the things that I would do with my books is if I had an idea for a book and I had a pretty good, I figured out the plot and outline and whatnot and the characters, I would write like the first 5,000 words or so, or 6,000 words, and I would send them to Justin and say, you know, hey, let me get a temperature on, is this going the right way or the wrong way? Because maybe I was trying something different, first person point of view or whatever. And that was always just a great way to sort of figure out where do I need to go with what I'm doing, and is the pacing working? Is this working? Whatever. And I'm a big believer in that. Like, commit yourself to a thing to make a thing, but then do a thing and say, hey, give me, you know where I want to go. Tell me where, you know, tell me where I am.
Yeah. And you know, there's a different kind of conversation that we've had, Andrew, about your books, where it's like, okay, I like these characters. I like this kind of conflict. And it's like, okay, well, that is an invitation to kind of like brainstorm of like, what else would be cool? Mm-hmm. What cool that would happen if these characters interacted? And then there's like, okay, well, here's the manuscript of the book where it's like, hey, look, there might be some things that there were decisions that kind of went in directions that maybe I would have or would not have gone in. Now is the time to say, hey, this is, I would like a little bit more of that, or I was unclear on this, or like just the little things that can take things to the next level. And that Brian, you are supernatural at your feedback in that regard. I think that is you have such a tremendous creative mind for like figuring out where to go from like from 60 to 100, the 60% completed to 100% completed. I think you were just one of the best people I know to give that kind of feedback.
Wow, that's awesome to hear. It you know, I listened to it twice. One, I listened to it in sort of my natural environment, which is doing other stuff. May or may Hearthstone. Not be have been playing Hearthstone. But then when I gave you notes, I did the whole thing again from the beginning, and it was a challenging thing for me as a friend, because you have earned enough real estate in my heart that I owed you the complete and honest truth. By the time I was done, I looked and it was a page and a half of notes with time codes and specific thoughts of my confusion. And like, wait, are we at this time or are we at this time?
Oh,
like,
yeah. It's funny. The way that you're describing it makes it sound a lot more harsh than I took it.
Even if it's just one note, the temptation is, because you like someone, to spare them the pain of the one note.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, if you really care, you're going to write a page and a half of notes, and then you're going to look at it and say, I should probably call him ahead of time and let him know this is what's incoming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so the biggest thing with this version of it was, you know, everything that I had done before sending it out had kind of been cutting it down for clarity. I have a tendency, and this is something that I'm learning as I'm putting this project together, that my biggest flaw as a writer is I keep wanting to just download everything that I know about it. And oftentimes that leads to confusion, because I'm wanting to draw, you know, I'm wanting to mention context for something. I'm wanting to, you know, fill like these other like, oh, well, like, you know, what's also cool about this fun factoid. And for a story that this episode spans 20-something years, I mean, certainly over two decades, involves the most amount of people that will be included in any of the episodes, that, you know, was really confusing, even on the first version of it, and then edited down. So really what I was excited, and with Brian's notes were very, very helpful, because I know that if I can tell distracted Hearthstone Brian a story, I can tell anybody a story. that complicated. And so I think those notes were awesome. They were exceptional.
Dude, I'm so glad to hear that. I tried my best to give equal part. Man, it's a time consuming way to do it, but at every moment I wanted to convey like where my mind was going, and it was doubly frustrating because I would be like, man, I want to know this, I want to know that, and I want to know the other thing. And then 45 seconds later, I would get answers to all of that. And the temptation is to delete my note and say like, okay, I guess that's not a problem, because 45 seconds later, you give me the answer. But I suspect it's valuable to know that I was thinking, why am I not being told these things then? And then instead, you know, 45 seconds later, a note that says, yes, thank you for telling me that thing.
You know, there is, I've always said with comedy, all of comedy is communication. And if you want to know like why comedy bombs, why comedy doesn't work oftentimes, is because, not because the idea was bad, not because that the delivery wasn't good. It was that the audience wasn't on the same page. The audience was, their mind was kind of wandering somewhere else, and so they took the joke to be something else, or it just didn't all land at the same time. The best comedians, you know exactly where they are going. They are setting the stage very deliberately, and then they pop that bubble. And what I found out is, like, not only is that all storytelling, but certainly for this, it was, and this is what I think, Brian, you're really good at, is just understanding that, like, where is the audience? You know, where is the audience here? What do they think? And even down to the little things of, like, articulating, like, oh, so there's a moment in which I discuss, you know, that Richard Nixon got to the Senate and then was in the White House as the vice president to Richard Nixon in under 2 years. And, you know, Brian's note as it reads is, wait a minute, really? That's kind of crazy. Was he there any longer than Obama? And then 45 seconds later, there's a line in there saying by the time that he was done with the Senate, he was there for less time than Obama. And it's like, that's good, like, that I got to that question. But those little bits of frustration are what oftentimes can distance somebody from a project. And conversely, those little hits of dopamine of, like, oh, I wonder about this. Oh my God, I got it right there. Those are those little invisible bonds that, like, really, I think, make something, make people kind of bond to it.
That's actually a really good point, because the podcasts and audiobooks that hit hardest for me tend to have those moments of serendipity where I'm asking myself the exact question just as the answer comes in. There's something about that joy of, like, having everything set up such that you're like, oh my goodness, does that mean? And you're like, and then you hear the words, which means, and you're like, oh my God, it landed.
Yeah. Rabidus says, are you looking out for an echo chamber? I don't think that this is, I mean, and I'll let Andrew and Brian say, this is not about politics as in the issues. This is about politics as in the mechanisms of people running for president and how they do it.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if you meant in that sense or just, you know, or
just us cheering for you.
Oh yeah. Oh, I mean, no. I mean, not with these two.
No. Well, before the show, I said, yeah, Brian's like, I had trouble giving notes. Like, I had no problem, not because it was all rah, rah, rah. I think what he did is great, but I'm like, when I give notes, it's going to be like, you know, I send him my iPhone notes, like, here, you know, my thoughts. But also the thing is, like, whenever I give notes, and, like, Justin's a lot like me, is you go to a few people you trust and you look for what comes up multiple times.
Yes.
You know, because Brian's take on stuff is sometimes very different than mine. Like, Brian's excited about something I could give an F about. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's just getting in the way of the story. And it's, but if Tom says, or somebody else says the same thing Brian says, then it's like, ignore Andrew. And that's, you've got to find that, because it can be very dangerous to try to play to one friend to write a thing for this one person, this one audience. Because, like, I'm not a guy that plays Hearthstone while I listen to stuff. I listen to stuff intensely. And so I'm like, well, why did you say this again? You already said this. Like, this is redundant to me. And so finding that middle ground. But, like, I had, like, hey, I wasn't clear on this because you said this, but I think somebody might be lost here or whatever.
And that really, to be honest, a lot of the stuff, you know, there's stuff that kind of falls into artistic license. And there's some stuff that I, you know, there's, like, tone stuff where it's like, okay, so Andrew had a really good note about my tone on one of the sections. And that's one where I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to be curious to see who else might, you know, come back with that. And we'll kind of see that there. But then there's other stuff where it's like, both Andrew and Brian came back with a note from kind of different perspectives of, like, the intro just kind of being too long and doing a thing that I then do again a little bit later, and you don't need two of them. So it's like, Andrew's point was that, you know, I don't need to do a big, you know, a full regal introduction to a topic that people are going to know when they press play, because podcasts are not things that accidentally end up on your doorstep. You deliberately seek them out. And you know, the solution to both is to shorten and restructure the intro, which
you know, is something that, like, I had kind of had a suspicion needed to be done. Otherwise, it just got to a point where I just needed to send it out.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's, you've done all the work. It's just figuring out, you're really just trying to figure out how to put the pieces together. And, you know, and man, it's like, I have, when I send out a thing to get, I have a couple friends, and I know that when I give it to you, you know, Justin, like, I know Justin will give me good character and story notes. I know what'll get there. You know, if I give it to, like, my buddy Ken, I know Ken's going to give me kind of an overall average guy kind of, like, take on it. How does this appeal to him versus other sorts of pop? And I understand what I'm getting from each person, and this helps affect stuff. And I think that's a very, because, like, Brian listens to way more podcasts and stuff on the nose like this than I do, you know, like, way, way, way more than I do. So Brian's take is going to be like, how does this fit next to hardcore history? How does this fit into that world of that? You know, and I don't give, and a lot of things I didn't give notes on stuff, not that I have them, but because I'm like, Brian will have good notes on this because Brian's got a lot more experience here. I'll talk more about, like, you know, hey, who's the center of this story here? Or what do I think the tone is here? I'll focus on what I think my contribution is going to be to you. So, you know,
well, and figure that out. That sort of brings us to the part that was very challenging for me to bring forward. I could have easily overlooked it and not said anything about it, but I ended up, I don't know if I told you this, Justin, I spent 30 minutes with Bonnie, the beginning of Raise the Dead with all of my favorite, you know, podcasts, and be like, you know,
wow,
that this is somebody in the room monitoring the mic technique with a hardware compressor, with this, that, and the other stuff. And ultimately, we, you know, I didn't want to accidentally just sneer and say, I don't know, the audio sounded brittle to me. It was only after going through where it's like, yeah, the audio quality just didn't seem to be matching what I side by side, and it became more apparent when you listen to AB side by side. But that was the hardest note for me to give, and the one that made me pick up the phone and call you directly.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, one of Brian's notes is like, hey, look, if you want this to be something that sounds like NPR, then you might need to re-record everything with possibly with a mic technician there, and, you know, figuring out your sound situation, or somebody paying somebody to figure out your sound situation. I actually still don't know what I'm going to do with that. Brian had the idea of sending it to a friend of ours, Jacob, the audio guy from the Ice Cream Social podcast, and he came back saying, oh, I did. He actually thought that I wanted him to just edit the file and change it. But he's like, yeah, I did like some minor EQ stuff, but I think that it's fine. So.
Oh, that's interesting. Because
I had a very similar response when you told me that the other day.
Yeah, because Bryce, and I would say Bryce is pretty good at recognizing audio quality, yeah. but he didn't even really recognize the problem as I perceived it.
I mean, NPR has a very specific sound, right? It's very quiet, it's very controlled, and so they do compress it, and so they get much closer in the mic, and so as a result, the bass response is much higher, and so it does sound a little warmer, And you know, you could get that out of you know, even just software compression or some EQ, like Jacob mentioned. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to hear different people's, I don't know, ears on it.
Yeah, I guess unfortunately the only way to know is to get somebody who works at NPR to listen to it and say, could you run this as is or no?
But also, NPR is not the only way.
Oh, sure. Go. But it's a, it, you know, that's the whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the debate is, does this sound professional? Like, does this sound something beyond the kind of talk radio? Like, there is a difference between talk radio and public radio, and talk radio can be a little messier. Talk radio can be a little wilder because it's content that is being churned out as live. And it's like, does this sound edited and pre-recorded versus does this sound as live? And I think that's the line that kind of needs to be crossed. And if that is not the case from what
from some people listening to it, then that is something that I need to look at. You know, it's something that I need to think about.
Yeah. Have you talked much about music? Because I only got to listen to about a half of the episode, which is why I didn't send any notes yet.
Sure.
But it did sound like you did have a few musical cues involved. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that process of finding those? Because I know you were – it's a big component of these types of recordings.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really the two – part of my desire to do this is because I really – I'm frustrated oftentimes with history podcasts. I think that the version of history podcast that has kind of dominated has been very NPR-esque, that comes off with, and more specifically, like This American Life, like that style of I'm a relatable person and I'm going to kind of channel the story through me. But there's like these very kind of telltale sort of like sing-songy elements to stuff. And I think that the oftentimes the research is not great. And so the two shows that I really wanted to model it after with this project after were Hardcore History and, Cocaine and Rhinestones, another podcast that I really like. And one of them is about music. So it plays music constantly. The other is Hardcore History, where there's no music at all. It's literally just Dan Carlin talking. So that is something that I had to navigate. I wound up doing stuff that is not so much musically dependent. I have like a main theme, and in the new version of the intro, I have a little bit more just kind of background, sort of almost more texture than it is music. But other than that, it's a lot of archival sound, and that's where I kind of I'm trying to split the difference, is that it's a little bit more history come to life than it is necessarily totally scored with music.
Yeah. This was the thing when I was working on my podcast, on the Trending Lemon podcast, where I was really wrestling with how much music should be in it. Mm-hmm. Because it's I ended up making music for it, so I could have made it as long as it needed to be. And I think I ended up using music similar to how we use music in the videos that we make for YouTube, in that they're almost like chapters. They're like chapter markers, or in the podcast, they're
sort of a bed of energy underneath individual segments.
Right. When something's wrapping up and we're about to transition into a new thing, then that's when we bring in the music, just to kind of give it some separation, and to make it feel a little fuller. But also, Raise the Dead is significantly shorter, in the time frame where you probably could do music or some sort of textury sort of music underneath.
I mean, like you could make the argument that a lot of the problems that I've run into in terms of people losing the plot or forgetting where they are in time could probably be aided by me kind of taking a breath and saying like, okay, well, this story is wrapped up and now we pick up with the other story. The way that it's written as of now, at least, is something that does kind of go from one thing to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. So I don't know. I'll hear if that's something that you think, Bryce.
Let me ask you a question, and I don't know what stage you're at. I think you've done an incredible amount of research on this. You've got a trove of it. I'm still not sure why you chose the structure you did, because like to me, the natural thing would have seemed to be like episode one's going to be Kennedy, episode two will be Nixon, and then three, the collision, the 1960 thing, because that was the back and forth thing. Was like, I was kind of like, because I know you said you could do a deep dive. It's kind of like, man, like I would love to just have like one whole episode on Nixon, you know, do one whole episode on you know, Joe Jr. and then John in that, because the back and forth.
I wrote those. So I wrote those scripts, and what I was afraid of, and the reason why, and these were some of the notes that I initially got from the first producer that I was working with. The fear was that some people are just more interesting than others. Some people have more meat on the bones than the story-wise for what we're going for than others. And that they are better off separate. I mean, the Kennedys are kind of the they're the heavies, right? Like JFK is kind of the guy. Nixon is his foil. And the further I got away from that, you know, the less interesting it was, I guess, initially when I wrote it.
I think Nixon's an interesting guy, you know, and I think early Nixon's a guy that for most people, Nixon sort of begins and ends in 1972, you know, I mean, it's sort of, and I think that early period of that to me is, and it doesn't mean it has to be a full hour. It could be shorter or something, but I think that I would like to see that. I'd like to see what, you know, I'd like to see the script or whatever. I'd love to take a look at that because, like I said, I think that, I mean, you lead with the first one, like Kennedy, because it's the most interesting name, but then to do the Nixon episode, because I think he's worth the early Nixon, I think is worth, because it's such a.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not for him lack of him being interesting. I think it's just more getting to, I mean, the biggest question that I kind of had in the writing and then in the editing and production of it was like, what is the story? And if part of the story is comparing things from then to now, then the key driver is how did Kennedy do it? And why did Nixon not? So that ultimately kind of became the clarifying element and look, there are, you know, basically the episodes go as follows. This is sort of like introducing you to everybody in episode one, and that basically leads us up to the beginning of 1960. Second episode is all about it's a little bit more kind of prehistory, but also gets us into the American mob and Frank Sinatra. The third is all about the primaries that Kennedy runs. The fourth is all about Nixon. The fifth basically takes us with Kennedy and Nixon all the way up to election night. And then the final one is unraveling everything that happened in the aftermath and kind of prosecuting the case for the conspiracy that the mob helped Kennedy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, again, obviously the Kennedys are going to be very, very rich and interesting, but like, Nixon's a guy that like nobody knows anything about other than, oh, impeach. But it's like, this is a guy who had a very interesting, there's the Oliver Stone movie, but like, hey, you know, he went straight out of the Navy into political office like Kennedy, you know, and that's the thing that I think is interesting is there's a lot of these similarities between the two of them. Difference, Nixon was lower middle class poverty. I mean, not poverty, but lower, his family was just, you know, ecked along, but that war, you got two guys who came straight out into politics. Both of them were recruited heavily for that and whatnot. There's sort of a lot of similarities there too, that it's kind of like, you know, I don't know, would be interesting.
Yeah. And hopefully, yeah, enough of that comes through in the episode that focuses totally on Nixon as, you know, through his relationship with Eisenhower and Bank of Chin. There's certainly, you know, hopefully I get enough Nixon to satisfy people that are curious about it in that episode.
Yeah, I guess I just think from like a structure thing, I guess you've done such an amazing job of your history there and all that. And I'm just looking at like, how do you tell the story? There's so much jumping around.
Yeah.
Is there, let's give you a thread here. Let's give you a thread here. Then the next episode, they're going to collide. I don't know. I just, Brian, you speak.
I think arranging them thematically is a fine way. It certainly felt like the first episode was place setting. The big themes that I felt like I was meant to take away were, number one, yes, the 1960 election is very relevant to you in this modern day because there are shocking and surprising parallels to what happened in 2016. And if you want to know what comes next, then, you know, raising the dead. Oh, that's one thing that you don't get around to explaining the tagline until the very end of this first episode. What is it you say? Like, at some point, journalism dies and becomes history. But on this show, we raise the dead.
News dies and becomes history. On this show, we raise the dead. That's the main title, like 8 minutes in.
I think it's great. I really
dig about where the Chicago voters came from.
Hey-o,
I mean,
topical.
Also, I mean, no.
Legit. Not of Chicago. I legit thought that's what it was.
No, because that's where I initially came up with the idea. So that is legitimately, there's a line in the HBO Rat Pack movie where Momo Giancana, picks up the phone and says, "We're raising the dead in Chicago." So that is where I got that title. And then, as I've kind of thought more about the show where I might want to go with it, I kind of wanted to divorce it a little bit from that specific idea. But trust me, that will be made clear as we even in episode 2, where we talk a lot about Momo Giancana and the mob and the Kennedys' complicated relationship with them.
I'm very excited about this whole project, and I was very impressed with what I heard. And for our listeners here, like, this is Brian and I going over, like, well, if you want to get – this is our nitpicky kind of thing on a how do you take it and put it on the level of Serial and other stuff. That's what we want, is
right,
what we want to
right.
see.
And that's the idea. I mean, what I want to do, and in all phases, is to leverage our community. In this case, it's in creative, creative criticism. And and then when it's finished, it, in terms of publicity, and hopefully it deserves the quality that, or it is of the quality that deserves people listening to it. That is the number one goal. Is this is a story that's really important to me, and this has been a good process up till now. It's going to be a hopefully rewarding but challenging process going forward. And it's moving now, which is good.
Very excited. Any picks?
I don't know that I have anything new from the other one. I mean, my pick is Raise the Dead by Justin Robert Young. Everybody go subscribe to Politics, Politics, Politics. We could talk about our friend Andrew Heaton and the fact that he's launching his Patreon.
So that was another fun thing that happened over the last week was Brian got a call from our friend Andrew Heaton, and then I got a call from our friend Andrew Heaton, who said that he was parting ways with the Blaze, the outfit out there in Dallas. He had done a show called Something's Off with Andrew Heaton that was really funny and really smart. Brian and I were guests on it, but he is now no longer with them, and so we we're each trying to help him decide what he wants to do next. I suggested creating a Patreon just to have it, but he wound up tossing it out there in the final episode, and now without a podcast, like, he literally has not done a single episode. He is at a very robust $600 an episode for a vapor RSS feed as of now. Eventually, it will be a show, but. Amazing. A great, great, great job, and I'm proud to be a patron.
Agreed.
Bryce?
Go to that. Andrew Heaton, check him out.
Fine. Go to Andrew Heaton.
It's hard to come up with two picks a week. It's hard to do
there's,
two picks.
There's two Andrews on the internet. Heaton and Main. Sounds like a crime-fighting duo.
Let him have it. Cool. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.